The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
About three quarters of business people prefer face-to-face meetings to virtual contact, but about 38% say budget restrictions on business travel prevent them from doing just that. That's according to recent findings by recruitment specialist Ambition and travel management company Carlson Wagonlit Travel, or CWT. They surveyed 1,100 business executives across Asia Pacific. Joining us now to discuss the findings are Michael Valkovich, CWT's Vice President of Global Sales and Program Manager in Asia Pacific. Good to have you with us, Michael.
Thanks, Michelle. Good to be here.
78% of respondents say yes, they prefer face-to-face as opposed to the virtual meetings. What factors are outweighing convenience and costs in terms of why respondents say they prefer in-person meetings, even if it means frequent business travel?
Sure. Yeah, there's a few factors that came out in this survey that we did with Ambition. And, you know, they're fairly commonsensical. But for people like me who travel a lot, like more than 10 or 12 times a year, you know, these weigh heavily on our minds when we're trying to avoid trips. But one of them is understanding a business situation at hand. It's very, very difficult to do that reading from data or reports until you go visit a situation if you're trying to drive cost improvements, certainly if you're trying to sell something or close a deal. Another one is dealing with challenging situations, right? There are many, you know, difficult situations that must be dealt with face-to-face in order to make the right decisions. Another one is reading body language and connecting personally with people during a business environment. You know, you get more out of that communication, and it opens up the paves the way for future success later. And the other one that's an interesting one is we found in this response, people prepare much more effectively for business meetings when they're going to go face to face. There's a lot more preparation work that goes into a face to face meeting in understanding the business scenario, thinking about what you're going to say, thinking about what your desired outcome is, than it would be for a virtual or a conference call.
Mm-hmm. Well, saving time and money are the key benefits of tech-enabled meetings. But you also found out that what may seem to have some cost benefits in the short term can prove a false economy in the long term. So can you elaborate preferably with a case study?
Sure, yeah. There's a few examples. I will not use names to protect the innocent here, but there are many examples in business travel of being penny wise and pound foolish, as the saying goes, right? I think one of the things that we always need to be aware of when thinking of using virtual telepresence or conference calls is what's the purpose of the trip, right? What's the purpose of going on a business trip? For something like this, obviously, I would have to come see you guys, even though I had to go across town. The other thing that we've looked at is there's a case study of an example that we worked with a professional services company, a name that we all know, and they had to cut down on internal face-to-face travel of short trips, either one-day round trip or single-day overnight domestically in one of their Asia-Pacific markets, in Australia specifically. What we had to do is look at the trip reason and look at the departments for the travel. And then we could assess quickly, should they have to do a second level approval in order to gain approval to go on such a trip, right? If it's non-revenue generating for the business, or if it's something that can be handled using the telepresence facilities, there's a lot of ROI there in using those types of things for internal or for non-revenue generating activities. But the only way to really unlock that is adopt a managed travel program and begin to use the data to your advantage.
So despite face-to-face meetings being the more favored choice, 38% of those surveyed said budget restrictions on business travel are preventing them from doing just that. So what's it going to take for business travel to move from being seen as a discretionary spend to a strategic investment to fuel business growth?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of our mission statement, right? So we want people to think about travel strategically, about the return on investment of travel, right? And not so much as a privilege or a perk, but as an investment for your long-term success of your business, right? So the first step towards doing that is gaining control of your data, understanding how many trips your people take and what's your average ticket price, making sure people are booking through the correct channel so you have visibility on all of those things. Travel can be the second or third highest variable spend or controllable cost of many enterprises. Certainly in spaces like professional services, energy, and marine businesses, it is a very, very high annual cost. And it's something that putting these practices into place is definitely to the advantage of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the keys that we always need to bear in mind is that data is central to our decision-making process, but it's a clue. It's not an answer, right?
Mm-hmm. Are you finding that most companies are slow to realize this, and why?
Yeah, from our perspective, we would probably say yes, because we would like to see everyone adopting sound managed travel policies and saving money and giving travelers a better traveler experience. I think there's a few reasons why they might be slow to adopt it. One, in many organizations where they do not have a managed travel policy in place, travel is viewed as a privilege, right? Sometimes senior leaders prefer not to be monitored or questioned on the decisions that they make regarding their schedule or their choices, right? Here in Singapore, we all have our favorite carrier, you know, that everyone likes to fly, right? Mm. And one reason why people don't adopt managed travel policies is potentially the transparency that goes with it and some of the questions that get asked about why did you choose to do this or that thing. Another reason is that managed travel in some regards is kind of an open secret. It's a way to save money. It's a proven methodology to improve cost management. But a lot of people don't want to put the effort in. And part of the reason for that is because it doesn't have a clear owner in the enterprise. Mm. Whether it's HR or finance or potentially their own travel department, mobility services might be a title that some companies would use. Sometimes they don't know where to put it, which is another reason why companies like us get involved at CWT to try to help define that.
Help us understand how companies typically measure or think of ROI when it comes to business travel.
Unfortunately, a lot of them don't think of it that way. We're trying to change that conversation, right? One of the things that we encourage our clients to look at, and one of the conversations that we have is when you segment your business functions, what are they trying to do with their travel? Is it drive cost savings or drive efficiency, process optimization, or is it business growth? Right? Are you meeting with new people? Are you opening new markets? Are you investigating new places? When you look at the ROI on travel, you always have to keep in mind, are we beating the street on cost, and are we, you know, doing year-on-year improvement to the management, but also how does it relate to the business results of those business units, right? Mm-hmm. For instance, another kind of case study example would be we have a banking client where they look very specifically at customer-facing revenue-generating activity, and they have a different policy for them than they do for their corporate services or training environment, right? And that's reflective of how they judge ROI differently based on those different business functions, which are important and do require face-to-face interaction, but they judge the ROI a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do the survey findings mean to a global hub like Singapore, mm-hmm. which regularly sees frequent business travel in and out of the country?
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the things that it points to is that there's room for improvement, right? There's room for improvement in adopting managed travel policies and understanding the value of face-to-face interactions and also justifying it more to senior leadership, especially to finance decision makers, saying, hey, you know, we're doing a good job adhering to the company policy here. We are saving money off the street on things like average ticket price or average room rate in the hotel sourcing program. It also means a little bit, and I think this is coming from the side of the ambition, there's more improvement to be made in benchmarking against other organizations, right, for where your travel policy can be a competitive advantage. And that's a two-sided coin, right? One, employees want to work for an employer where there's a strong and good corporate travel policy that isn't draconian, that doesn't impose unnecessary restrictions on them. But at the same time, it can be a competitive advantage to deliver cost savings to clients, right? If you're working on projects like a professional services company would.
Okay, I want to pick up on what you just mentioned, that competitive advantage and maintaining talent. Mm. Over 60% of respondents in the survey we're talking about said they consider a company's travel policy when evaluating job opportunities. So how exactly can companies better design travel policies to attract and retain talent?
Sure. It's a big deal for people who are traveling once a month, right, to understand what's their life going to be like in a new role. One of the things that's really important is benchmarking against your competitive set or against other, you know, I guess, companies of your similar size and scope, right? So one of the things that you want to do when you're attracting talent is making sure that you're in line. If your business class policy is 5 hours or 7 hours, for instance, what type of hotel stay rules you have in place, et cetera. So controlling those things doesn't mean that you're imposing on the traveler. It just means that you're aware of them, right? So one of the things that we encourage people to do when benchmarking for recruiting status and or, you know, benchmarking against peers is to understand where they are on entitlement and on privileges. One of the simpler things you can do is, you know, make sure that travelers are able to accrue for points and loyalty. There's other things that we do. We've done gamification type programs where we use points and we use loyalty to motivate travelers to stay within the program because they're giving up their personal time. They're traveling over the weekend. They're traveling at night. Loyalty points are not worth anything to an enterprise per se, but it is something that might create a compensation or a perk for a traveler in a positive way and in a harmless way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, your research also said that overlaying travel data with HR data lets a company see the impact of business travel and the company's travel policies on the employees' well-being. How so?
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting, is when you take a look at deep travel data when it's cohesive and overlay it with things like the revenue performance of a sales team, right? That's what we spoke about a little bit earlier. Another way you can look at that is sick leave. We found some very interesting data points about people who travel 12 or more times, more than once a month, are more likely to fall what we would call catastrophically ill, something like a pneumonia, right, where they're going to be out of work for 6 weeks or more, right? This has a high cost to the organization, and that sometimes is driven by extreme jet lag, working very long hours, moving from time zone to time zone. A lot of it's hard on the immune system to do long-haul travel very frequently. And we found a correlation among those travelers in that set who are very, very frequent travelers and their likelihood of having a serious health issue. So this could even go so far as to being something that people think about when applying for insurance premiums, right? If you can have a really good control over that, that's an example of how you could benchmark yourself for your traveling segment of employees and your cost of medical care, right?
Taking a closer look at business travel with Michael Volkovich, CWT's Vice President of Global Sales and Program Management in Asia Pacific. Thanks, Michael.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.